Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we've got a really great stack of articles and research to get through. Our mission, as always, is to pull out the absolute must-know nuggets from the cutting edge of tech. We're talking storage, computing, AI, even some web standards. Basically, giving you that shortcut to being, you know, properly informed about the big shifts happening right now.
That's right. And for this deep dive, the goal is really to cut through all that information overload. We want to distill what's most critical, help you understand not just what's happening, but crucially, why it matters, and maybe reveal some of those interconnected threads of innovation along the way.
Okay, let's jump right in then. Starting with storage, it's actually pretty fascinating how storage solutions are evolving so fast, from, you know, devices you can hold in your hand, all the way up to these massive systems powering huge data centers. So first up, let's talk personal security, portability. We looked at the OWC Guardian USB-C portable SSD. What's really neat here is how it mixes serious security with being super user-friendly. It's got 256-bit AES Opal hardware encryption, which is solid, but the cool part, a built-in touchscreen, kind of like on your phone, right on the drive itself, for your PIN or passphrase, so no software needed on the computer side. That's a big plus for easy, secure access. It's tough, anodized aluminum, capacity is up to 4 terabytes, and speeds, well, real world speeds up to about 1,000 megabytes per second.
Yeah, and what's insightful there is how OWC managed to integrate that really robust hardware level security dot with an interface that's just, well, intuitive. That touchscreen makes a difference. It kind of raises an interesting question, doesn't it? For sensitive data you carry around, how much value do you put on having a solution that's both super secure and genuinely seamless to use, like this one?
That's a great point. It's about making high-level security accessible, right? Not just for IT experts.
Okay,
so that's data in your pocket. But what if you need more? Like a lot more storage at home or for a small business? That brings us to the DIY NAS scene. Network attached storage. There's some cool stuff happening there. Rosewill, for example, they just launched their new ThorNAS and ThorNAS Pro cases. And these aren't your typical, you know, industrial looking server racks. They're full towered desktop cases designed specifically for building your own powerful NAS or maybe an NVR system for cameras. They offer just massive storage capacity, good cooling, and you don't need any specialized rack mount gear. The standard ThorNAS, it can take up to the 12 hot swap hard drives if you have the optional cages. And the Pro model comes with 8 hot swap bays already installed, but you can extend it up to 13 hard drives plus a couple of SSDs. They seem pretty sturdy, steel chassis, good airflow design, and modern front I/O like USB-C.
And this, I think, really connects to a bigger picture, a growing trend towards empowering people like you to build powerful, high-capacity storage, stuff that's accessible, you know, and actually looks okay in a home or small office, moving away from that purely industrial server vibe.
Right, putting more control in your hands. But speaking of control, or maybe the lack of it sometimes, this next bit gets really interesting, especially for anyone looking at building their own NAS. We need to talk about Synology and their latest SNV5400 Enterprise SSDs. So these drives are specifically made for Synology NAS systems, but they've caught some flack for the pricing, like really steep prices, up to 620 euro for the 1.6 terabyte model. That works out to over 390 euro per terabyte.
Which is nutty, yeah.
Compare that to something like a WD Bread SN700 NAS SSD, which is maybe around 80 euro per terabyte. And big difference. Plus, these new Synology drives. Still using PCIe 3.0, even though PCIe 5.0 is out there now.
Mm-hmm. And that really forces a discussion, doesn't it? About the balance between guaranteed compatibility and, let's face it, vendor lock-in. Synology is clearly aiming for that seamless experience within their ecosystem. They mandate their own certified drives for the newer Plus Series NAS models. But that price gap. And using older tech, it prompts a critical look at value and choice for you, the consumer. Do you pay the premium for the guarantee, or do you maybe look at unofficial workarounds, which obviously carry risks?
Exactly. It's a tough spot for users, and you can see why people might explore those workarounds, given the potential savings. Okay, moving on from pricing controversies to some cool innovation, the convergence of AI and storage. Minis Forum has this N5 Pro AI NAS kit out. It's pretty packed, but it's a 5-bay NAS kit packing AMD Ryzen AI processors. Supports up to 96 gigs of DDR5 RAM. Storage options are really flexible. 3 M.2 slots, one even has an M.2 to U.2 adapter, plus 5 standard drive bays. You can cram up to 144 terabytes in there. It supports powerful stuff like ZFS with snapshots, which is great for data safety, various RAID levels, LZ4 compression, and it throws in AI features like smart photo albums running on their own Minis Cloud OS. Plus, you get both 5 gigabit and 10 gigabit Ethernet for fast network transfers. And while we're on the topic of smart software enhancing storage, QNAP, they've released the QSync 6.0 beta. This is their latest all-in-one file sync and backup tool. It looks like a pretty big upgrade for managing files and collaborating. It integrates real-time and scheduled backups, plus you get bi-directional and one-way file sync.
Some neat new features too, like point-in-time recovery, offline sync for when you're not connected, space saving selective downloads, group folder sharing. What's really interesting is that QSync 6.0 basically acts as your own secure private cloud platform. So it's pitched as a cost-effective, subscription-free alternative to public clouds, letting you keep control over your data.
Yeah, what's fascinating here is seeing these systems really evolve beyond just, you know, dumb storage boxes. You've got AI being integrated for smarter data management like Minusform is doing, and then sophisticated software like QSync offering these robust, subscription-free private cloud solutions. Both point towards storage becoming more intelligent, more integrated, maybe more self-sufficient for individuals and teams, whether they're in the office or working remotely.
Definitely. Smarter data management, potentially without those recurring fees. Okay, to wrap up this storage segment, let's look at the absolute bleeding edge, enterprise-level stuff. Dapioster just announced its J5060 QLC SSD. And this thing is pushing capacity to, well, extreme levels. We're talking an industry-leading 122.88 terabytes in a single drive, based on QLC NAND. Remember, QLC means quad-level cell, packing more bits per cell for that incredible density. Now, for a data center, this is huge. It could reduce their physical footprint, the complexity, by maybe up to 5 times. Fewer boxes, less rack space, big savings on power and cooling. It's also surprisingly power efficient, just 13 watts when idle, apparently, while still giving you read speeds, up to 7.3 gigabytes per second. And reliability looks way better than hard drives. They're quoting like a 0.04% annualized failure rate compared to maybe 1.7% for HDDs. Seems ideal for those read-heavy AI workloads, and they claim can lower the total cost of ownership, the TCO, by up to 35% over 5 years.
These ultra-high-capacity QLC drives are genuinely transformative for data centers. It's not just speed anymore. It's about fundamentally improving reliability, power efficiency, density, and ultimately the overall cost-effectiveness. Especially at the massive scale required by modern AI and big data workloads, this solid-state tech is really hitting its stride in the enterprise.
It really is mind-boggling density, and those efficiency gains are key. All right, let's pivot now. Let's talk sheer performance, new hardware, and how AI is getting tangled up with memory and storage in new ways. Kicking this off, let's look at next-gen SSD performance, PCIe 5.0 drives. We saw some reviews of the Crucial P510. It uses Phison's E31T controller paired with Micron's new G9 TLC NAND. It's trying to hit that sweet spot between high-end PCIe 4.0 and the top-tier PCIe 5.0 drives. Speeds are quoted up to 11,000 milliamps per thread, 19,500 middle days right. What's interesting, though, is while it's efficient and doesn't need crazy cooling, it seems to slightly underperform some competitors using the same controller but maybe different NAND, like Kioxia's. Suggests that the specific memory chips, or maybe the firmware tuning, really does matter. Price is around $110 for a terabyte. Now contrast that with the Transcend MTE260S PCIe Gen 5 SSD. This one seems to be going for, well, pure unadulterated speed. It's Transcend's flagship. They're talking sequential reads up to 14,000 millibytes. Writes up to 11,000 millibytes. IOPFs are sky high too, up to 1.4 million. Standard M.2 2280 size, up to 2 TB.
Uses a 6-nanometer low power controller and has an ultra-thin graphene heatsink for cooling. Clearly targeting high-end desktops, powerful laptops, AI computing platforms, the works.
Yeah, and this comparison really puts the spotlight on that question for you, the user. How much speed do you actually need? And are you willing to pay the premium for the absolute fastest? Because, as you said, the specs don't always tell the whole story. PCIe 5.0 is fast, sure. But the specific end, the controller tuning, the firmware, it all plays a role in real-world performance and maybe even efficiency. It's not just about the generation number.
Exactly. Sometimes good enough is actually better value, depending on what you do. Okay, shifting gears from SSDs to memory, but maybe not the memory sticks you're used to seeing. We saw a pretty cool demo from G-Skill. They overclocked DDR5 10,000 using CAMM2 memory. Now, CAMM2, that's a newer memory module format. Looks quite different. Could be the future. G-Skill hit DDR5 10,000 speeds on a 64-gigabyte CAMM2 module and showed it was stable in memtest. They did this with ASUS on a modified motherboard using an Intel Core Ultra processor. It really highlights the potential of CAMM2, especially for high-capacity, high-performance setups in future desktops and workstations, maybe replacing traditional DIMMs eventually. And tying into that high-performance world, especially AI Samsung, they've announced production readiness for their 6th-generation DRAM tech. They call it 1C DRAM. This is crucial because it sets the stage for producing HBM4 later this year. HBM, high bandwidth memory, is absolutely vital for feeding those hungry AI chips and HPC systems. HBM4 uses fancy stuff like hybrid bonding to improve thermal performance and allow for super wide interfaces. Massive bandwidth right next to the processor.
Samsung says they're already in qualification testing.
with major players like NVIDIA and AMD.
It's really interesting seeing this parallel innovation in memory, isn't it? On one side, you have CAM M2 pushing boundaries for, let's say, consumer and workstation platforms, potentially changing PC builds. And on the other, Samsung's HBM4 progress, which is just fundamental for the extreme bandwidth needed by the biggest AI models and supercomputers. Both are about enabling next-gen computing, just serving different but equally important parts of the tech ecosystem.
Right. Better memory all around, whether you're gaming or training a massive AI. And for our last piece on performance, let's look at how AI software is getting smarter about storage. Kioxia updated its ASTQ software. ASTQ, it stands for All in Storage Approximate Nearest Neighbor Search. Bit of a mouthful. But think of it like this. AI often needs to find similar items in huge datasets really fast, like semantic search or RAG systems. ASTQ helps do that search very efficiently, directly on SSDs. It avoids needing to store giant indexes in expensive DRAM memory. You do the vector search right on the SSD. This new version adds more control, letting engineers tune the trade-off between search speed and how densely they pack data onto the SSD, which means you can potentially scale up AI workloads more efficiently without just throwing more expensive hardware at it.
Exactly, and that underscores a really crucial point, I think. AI efficiency isn't just about the GPUs. It's also very much about how smartly you store and retrieve the data. Shifting these complex vector searches onto SSDs with software like ASAQ is a clever strategy. It helps scale AI services more cost-effectively, reduces memory bottlenecks, and ultimately makes large-scale generative AI, you know, potentially more accessible and affordable. Smart software making the hardware work harder, or smarter, rather.
That's a great way to put it. We focus so much on the compute, but the data flow is critical. Okay, let's zoom out now. Look beyond the specific components. So there are some really big shifts happening in the global tech landscape. We're talking chip production, major security issues, even foundational web stuff. Let's start with semiconductors. There are projections now that China could lead global chip production by 2030. According to Yole Group, they're forecasting China might hit nearly 30% of global chip output by then. That would overtake Taiwan's current share, which is around 23%. Chinese foundries were apparently making about 8.85 million wafers a month this year, expected to hit over 10 million next year, driven by like 18 new fabs coming online. Now, obviously, they face U.S. export restrictions on advanced tech, but Beijing is investing heavily in domestic chip-making tools, lithography, design software, trying to close that gap. For now, though, China seems set to become the leader in what they call mature node production. These are the slightly older but still essential chips used everywhere, cars, industrial equipment, appliances.
Yeah, and this really does raise significant questions about the future of global supply chains and, frankly, technological independence. China's massive investment push could fundamentally reshape where the world's chips are made, particularly those foundational mature node chips. You could see a future where a lot of components for everyday tech, maybe even critical infrastructure, primarily come from China. That obviously has implications for various industries, global trade dynamics, and, yes, the geopolitical balance of power and technology. It's a major shift.
Definitely one to watch closely. Okay, let's pivot from geopolitics to security. And this one is a bit worrying, especially for businesses using Cisco gear. Cisco disclosed a critical vulnerability. It's CVE-2025-2309, affecting their Unified Communications Manager. And it's a nasty one. Turns out there were hard-coded SSH credentials with root access left in the system. Seems like a development oversight. What this means is an unauthenticated attacker from anywhere on the network could potentially gain full control of these systems. It got the maximum CVSS score, 10 out of 10. Critical. Cisco says there's no workaround. You have to patch to the latest release, 15SE3, immediately. And unfortunately, it seems this isn't the first time hard-coded credentials have caused problems in Cisco products.
Oof. Yeah, that's a stark reminder, isn't it? How a seemingly small mistake during development, like leaving test credentials in the final code, can lead to an absolutely catastrophic security flaw, a perfect 10. Easily exploitable, maximum impact. It just highlights the need for constant vigilance in software development, rigorous security audits internally, not just looking for external threats. And of course, the absolute critical importance of patching immediately when something like this is discovered. It's basic hygiene, but clearly essential.
Yeah, a sobering lesson for developers everywhere. Okay, moving to something a bit lighter, but still foundational. The web itself. Believe it or not, the PNG image format just got a major update, version 3.0. After more than 20 years, the W3C has officially upgraded PNG, and the big additions are native support for animation finally, and high dynamic range HDR. And apparently these new features add minimal file size overhead, just like 4 extra bytes. So this lets PNG compete better with formats like GIF for animation, or WebP for high-fidelity images, while keeping all its old strengths like transparency, alpha channel, color accuracy checks, and flexible streaming.
It's actually a great example of how even these really established fundamental web technologies can and do continue to evolve, bringing modern stuff like animation and HDR to a format that's been a reliable workhorse for decades. It just makes the web potentially richer, more visually appealing, more efficient for sharing images, shows that sometimes, you know, even old standards can get a significant refresh and stay relevant.
Absolutely. Good news for web developers and designers. Okay, finally, just a couple of quick hits on broader industry trends we noticed: company leadership and hardware design. First, Corsair completed its CEO transition. Thi La has officially taken over from the founder, Andy Paul. La was president and CEO before and was apparently key in shifting Corsair from mostly memory and components into the much broader gaming, streaming, and sim racing gear company it is today, with like over 30 product lines. And then on the hardware design side, Cooler Master launched a new version of a popular case, the NR200P V3. It's a compact mini ITX case, small footprint, about 18.6 liters, but it's designed to fit high-performance parts. Supports pretty big CPU coolers, long graphics cards up to 3.8 slots thick, includes a PCIe 5.0 riser cable for mounting the GPU vertically, uses magnetic latches for easy access, lots of mesh panels for airflow, aimed at powerful but small builds.
Yeah, and these two stories, while they seem quite different, both kind of reflect how dynamic the tech industry is, right? Corsair's leadership change points to strategic evolution, adapting to market shifts in the gaming and creator space. Very competitive area. While Cooler Master's case design shows that constant push to cram more performance into smaller and smaller boxes, that SFF small form factor trend, both are really about meeting changing user demands and trying to stay ahead, whether that's through business strategy or through clever product engineering.
Nicely put. And wow, okay, that brings us to the end. What a range we covered today, huh? Mm-hmm. From securing your personal data on the go, the ins and outs of DIY NAS builds,
yeah,
all the way to bleeding edge AI hardware, those massive enterprise SSDs, and even those big global shifts in chip making. Thanks everyone for joining us this deep dive. Hope you found it useful.
Yeah, this session really highlights just how interconnected everything is in our digital world. You know, from the tiny details of a new NAND chip inside an SSD, right up to those huge geopolitical shifts impacting where those chips get made. Every little innovation ripples outwards. Maybe it leaves you with a question to ponder. As technology keeps accelerating like this, what do you think the next truly disruptive breakthrough might be? Or maybe what's the unexpected challenge lurking around the corner that could fundamentally reshape how we live and work digitally?
Good question to mull over. Keep exploring, stay curious, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.